Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ahí va a llegar el gol del Arsenal. Ozil. Marca Mesut Ozil.
Bellerín, otro defensor, otro disparo, Monreal, gol. Marca el futbolista español, marca Nacho Monreal. Pim, pam, pum.
This is Arscast Extra.
Hello and welcome to another Arscast Extra, as always, with James from Gutterblog. James, good morning to you.
Good morning to you too, Andrew. How you doing today?
I'm all right. Had a fairly chilled out weekend. You know, nothing too strange or startling. Watched the new Batman trailer. I do hope they tell us how Bruce Wayne came to be the Batman, because, you know, that's a story that it really feels like it needs to be told.
At last, someone will lift the lid on just why this billionaire chose to become the crime fighter he did.
Do you know what he needs? Batman needs a podcast. He's got his own platform then. It'd be mad, wouldn't it? Welcome to my podcast. I'm Batman.
How many times can they make Batman?
I don't know. I mean, there's a sort of revolving door of Batman, from Michael Keaton to George Clooney to Ben Affleck. He was Batman for a while, wasn't he? Christian Bale, now it's Robert Pattinson.
I never watched Ben Affleck as Batman. I sort of managed to kind of close my eyes and ignore it.
Yeah, I don't think I saw that one either.
But it is amazing. Have you seen Colin Farrell in makeup as the Penguin?
Yeah, I saw a picture of that yesterday. Mad.
I mean, why pay all that money for Colin Farrell? Do you know what I mean? You could have just got some other bloke who looks more like that.
Yeah, Danny DeVito, perhaps.
Exactly. He's still available.
He sure is.
But yeah, I saw that as well. I had a good weekend. I had a weekend off, even though I didn't make an announcement on Twitter, you know, as journalists customarily do, of like, you know, taking a few days off, hope everyone's well. So I didn't do that.
I'm leaving Twitter forever, and I hope you all know that. Yeah. I'm leaving. Yeah. I'll never be back. Except
I know I have a problem. I know I have a problem with Twitter, and I don't deny it. You know, I knew I'd be on there anyway. But I did have a few days off. Yesterday, I took my niece to a pig farm. She's like coming up for two.
Right.
And it's when I say a pig farm, I don't mean they're like slaughtering pigs in front of you. I mean, there's like little pigs there that you can pet.
I thought that might be the case. You know,
she has to learn about industrial farming.
That will be her Batwoman origin story.
Yeah.
She'd become a pig lady or something.
Yeah. But she was terrified nonetheless, even though it was just like cute little pigs. Yeah. It was really incredible. Like, you're allowed in the pens with them, and you get given a little brush to stroke them. And she was just hiding from these pigs the whole time. I guess when you're 2 foot high, a pig could look frightening. But it was an attempt at something nice that really backfired.
Okay. Well, look, you know, it's the thought that counts, you know.
Yeah, exactly. When she's sort of traumatised by that, having therapy years and years on about being trapped with a pig inside a fenced,
you know how she deals with it? She goes on Batman's podcast. My guest today is Big Woman.
I mean, I would fear for him doing that podcast. He'd have a really sore throat, wouldn't he? After doing that voice. If his podcast was as long as ours, he'd really start cracking at the end.
Yeah. I'm the next episode.
Yeah.
Anyway.
But anyway, good to see, anyway, at long last, a Batman film.
Yes.
Our prayers have been answered.
Thank goodness, thank goodness. That's nice. Must be nice having a couple of days off. I was just working it out the other day. I think I'm coming up on a year without a day off, which is quite something. So I might, before the season starts, try and take a couple of days off somewhere just to recharge my batteries a little bit more. But did you watch the Champions League final? Because I looked at the two teams involved and I was just like, I can't be fucking arsed. I just cannot be arsed watching this. I mean, I was sort of all footballed out towards the end of the season, so a lot of the European stuff has gone past me. But, you know, the Champions League final is something that, you know, I've always watched. And in recent years, there's been this sort of tradition with my brother and some friends, and we go and we watch the Champions League final in a bar. We've done that for years. And obviously, you can't do that at the moment. Things are very different. But I just wasn't interested. I mean, I did not want PSG to win. I wasn't, you know, I was quite happy for Serge Gnabry and what have you, but you know, Bayern Munich, leave me cold, it has to be said. So they were the kind of least worst option in terms of how it went down, but I just couldn't be arsed. I actually watched a TV show about pigs being cooked.
Right, okay. What was that called?
It was called Ugly Delicious.
Oh, yeah. I'm aware.
It's good. It was an episode about barbecue and, you know, how they do different types of barbecue in different parts of America and all that kind of stuff. But then it was, sort of went around the world and, you know, it was an interesting program. But, you know.
Well, was it more interesting than the Champions League final? I don't know. I did watch it. I have been sort of engaged with it. I think it might be because in the absence of the Euros, which I was sort of expecting to happen this summer, it's felt a bit like a kind of international tournament, you know, knockout games, all in one country, players who used to play for us that are good now. You know, it's had a lot of those sort of hallmarks. Mm. But it was tricky. I was watching it with my brother last night, and at one point, I think my wife said to me, "Who do you want to win?" And I was like, I mean, it's really hard to choose.
Yeah.
I think ultimately I found myself slightly rooting for Bayern just because I think the way PSG have sort of, you know, got to that point, maybe it's just this sort of, you know, snobbery in me, but I find it a little bit more distasteful. And I guess Gnabry was out there, wasn't he? So
yeah.
I think I sort of went for Bayern. They won. Kingsley Coman scored the goal.
Former PSG player.
yeah. And he started, of course, ahead of Perisic, who had been playing for Bayern until that point, who, of course, we were looking at signing when we signed Denis Suarez, January 2018.
Oh, the memories, James, the memories.
I know. Beautiful times, beautiful times. Where is Yannick Carrasco these days?
Did he go back to Atletico?
He went, I think he might have done. He turned up somewhere, Yannick Carrasco.
No, he's still in China, according to Wikipedia.
He can't get out of China, that bloke. Someone needs to help him out. He's been trying for years now.
Mm.
But it was a good game. It was one of those games where it was sort of two really good teams. You know, I saw someone, and you'll forgive me, I forgot who, comparing it to kind of a couple of boxers sizing each other up in the early stages. Like, it was all quite intelligent and quite tactical and very sort of cultured and European in that respect. But I think Bayern Munich are probably the best team in Europe, so probably right that they won it. I mean, the main observation from it is that BT Sports commentary situation is approaching crisis point, really. I mean, Steve McManaman is so... He has sort of inherited the Mark Lawrenson role of just being desperately unhappy about every single thing that's happening.
I really hate that wussy tune. I don't like it.
It was very much... He was at that pitch, you know, where it was kind of... Dog's ears were pricking up, you know, because there was something was going on.
Yeah. And imagine him on the Batman podcast. Talk about a contrast in tones.
Yeah, that's true.
My guest today is Steve McManaman.
All right, Batman, how's it going?
Anyway.
Maybe he's the perfect villain for a Batman movie because of that inherent contrast.
The squeaker. The squeaker, that's what we call him, right?
Ah, the squeaker. A clue from the squeaker. yeah, listen, it was weird. BT were sort of in this odd position where they kept apologising for it being quite a bad game. They kept saying, like, I'm sorry, it's not been the goal fest we expected in the Champions League final. But it was a decent enough match. And Bayern won.
Yeah, as if, like, goals are the only interesting thing about football matches.
Yeah, which they weren't at all. I mean, we got to see Neymar cry. What could be more interesting than that? but no, it was a pretty interesting match. I mean, nevertheless, if that sort of puts a full stop on last season, as it were, it is mad to me that we are now in the week where Arsenal's season kind of begins with the Community Shield.
Yeah, it's mental. We'll come to that a bit later on because we got some questions about that. I saw someone tweet yesterday that Lewandowski was 30 when the season began and he's now 32. Is that real? Well,
Is that possible? I guess it is possible. Yeah. When's his birthday?
His birthday, the 21st of August. Oh, that's the same birthday as my brother. So there you go.
Same as true of your brother. He's aged 2 years in the course of this season.
Wow, crazy stuff. Crazy. So we had a question. I'll just do this one because it's here. Henry, who's at Dial Square King, said, did you notice the Arsenal post on Instagram saying the club is so proud of Gnabry for winning the Champions League? Should we be proud that he left us and won the Champions League with a different club? How do you feel about that? I mean, I think it's nice for him, and he seems like a really good guy, Serge Gnabry, and, you know, his North London is red tweets, etc., etc. He hasn't forgotten his Arsenal schooling in any way. I'm happy for him personally. I'm not sure as a club should we be proud of that?
I think we can be proud of his achievement, but I don't think we can be proud of our part in what led him to it. Congratulations, Serge Gnabry, on your Champions League win. Enormous regret expressed on our part would have been a more appropriate social media post.
We're hugely proud of the way we mismanaged your loan period at West Brom and Tony Pulis, but it made you the man you are today, actually. Yeah. It forged you from steel.
And I think we should have got a statement from our club with a sort of long apology, an explanation of what had gone on.
Oh, my goodness. Anyway, look, so that's the season over. And our season, as you said,
at long fucking last,
and our season is going to begin. But we do have a question about that, so we'll save it for part two. But I suppose the big story of the weekend was the departure of Freddie Ljungberg as one of Mikel Arteta's assistant coaches. Were you surprised? I can't say that I was particularly surprised by this, given that I think he was always going to stay when Arteta came in, at least until the end of the season. I think it would have been really weird for Arteta to come in and dispense with, you know, a coach who'd stood in when we needed him, when Unai Emery departed, and held the fort until Arteta was appointed. But it does feel like probably a reasonable time for this to happen. You know, it's off season. We can prepare. We can, you know, bring in new coaches if that's what we're going to be doing. And, you know, for Freddie, it means he can go at a time where there might be jobs available, and he's not leaving anyone in the lurch.
No, that's it. And I don't think this departure is kind of linked to, you know, some of the other departures we've seen for the club recently in terms of COVID or restructuring or anything like that. I do just think, the same as you, really. It made sense to keep him on. It gave Arteta an immediate kind of pair of eyes and ears who'd been around at the training ground prior, who'd seen what'd gone on. Someone who had a good connection as well with some of the younger players. I mean, look at the statement from Bukayo Saka and other people who spoke about the role Freddie played in their development. I think keeping him around made perfect sense. But it was clear, I think, in the course of last season that, you know, his role was in the background, shall we say. And, you know, I know sometimes he was up in the stands, but I remember at the FA Cup final when Arteta was there and he was kind of celebrating with his immediate assistants, Albert Stuvenberg and Steve Round, and then Freddie sort of turned up in his suit. You know, he looked separate. He looked separate. He looked, you know, a little bit removed from that team, and he wants to go and be a manager. So he's got to take the plunge at some point. It just feels like a natural parting of the ways, and one where, quite unusually in football, thus far, everyone seems to have fairly good things to say about everyone else, you know?
It seems to be a recurring theme at Arsenal over the last couple of weeks, but there you go. No, I mean, look, Freddie is a legend of the club, and you know, I think everybody would wish him well wherever he goes, and he made a contribution to this season. You know, when we needed someone to step in, he was there, and you know, it was really hard, wasn't it, not to feel sorry for him during that period where he had literally no staff to work with. He had Per Mertesacker, who's the academy manager, alongside him, and goalkeeping coach Sal Bibbo, who also left, I believe, over the weekend. So again, probably that kind of timing thing was a part of that. But you know, he took over a team that was in an absolute mess. I always remember, I can't remember which game it was, but I remember his reaction to some of our defending at one point was just to sort of hold his hands to his head and look aghast at what he had seen, as if he just could not believe professional footballers had done what he'd just seen them doing. So it was one of the images of the season for me, that.
It was, and I'm sort of glad for Freddie that he didn't kind of have to stay in that caretaker role much longer. You know, at one point, there were conversations about could this be until the end of the season, and I don't think that would have... Sorry, I'm just choking here.
That's okay.
Getting choked up thinking about Freddie leaving. I don't think that would have been especially healthy for anybody concerned, and I think that, you know, he didn't have enough support, certainly in his time, but it also was a huge job for someone who is relatively inexperienced as a coach. So I think, you know, he's got an exciting future, and I wish him all the best. And I don't think it precludes him maybe one day coming back to Arsenal in another role. Who knows? He's got such a great affinity with the club.
Well, yeah, look, he's going to go out on his own, hopefully, and get a managerial job. He was linked with AIK in Sweden over the last few weeks, but that went somewhere else. I mean, just sort of continuing on the theme, because there is a new coach who has been appointed, and Elroy Figueiredo says, "Goodly morning, gents. Would like to hear from you guys about the new backroom setup and the changes taking place, if possible." I you know, it's hard to go into detail because we're just beginning to see what's happening. I think, you know, Arteta, having had 9 months at the club, more or less now, and coming to the end of a season, is the time for him to make some decisions about some of the staff that he's got around. And he has been clear, hasn't he, that, you know, when it comes to improving things at Arsenal, his view is much more than simply the first team. He wants everything to be as good as it can be.
Yeah, I must say, when you asked that question, I thought you were saying that Elroy Figueiredo had joined the coaching staff, and I was desperately panicking, thinking, who is this exciting, exotic coach? I've never heard of them. I'm going to have to really fudge my way through this. Look, the set-pieces coach is genuinely an interesting development, isn't it? I mean, I feel like we say this a lot at Arsenal, but they need to be good.
Yes.
They need to be really good. But at least it sort of shows that Arteta recognises a weakness, not just in his team, but maybe potentially in what he himself brings. You know, maybe that's not his strength or his speciality, and he's prepared to delegate in that situation. And I think what's really interesting about appointing a set-pieces coach is that we should be able to see sort of some evidence of that relatively swiftly. You know, you'd think that that's something that will affect our approach at those dead balls pretty quickly. So it's going to be really fascinating to watch. You know, over that first few games, because I believe he's already started a couple of days ago at Arsenal, kind of what we do differently and how much improvement it makes.
Yeah, I mean, we did have something like that under Emery, didn't we? Juan Carlos Carcedo was the...
It was clearly his area.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I don't know. We'll wait and see what happens. And I suppose the evidence of that will play out in front of us over the coming weeks.
It's a big thing in football now, isn't it? It's that sort of specialist coaching. It's sort of come over from particularly the NFL. Liverpool were widely mocked, I believe, for appointing a throw-in coach or something like that last season. Why not?
Look, if you can get 1 or 2% advantage, I mean, how often do you look at a team who have a throw in whose options are limited, so you just kind of chuck the ball down the line and hope for the best? You know, if you can improve that, you improve your
retain possession.
Yeah, exactly, your retention of possession and things like that. So you know, I suspect we might see more developments like that. Whether we're going to get more in the background at Arsenal, I don't know. Have you heard anything? Are there more changes planned? I have a suspicion that there might be a few more things happening.
Yeah, I mean, there's talk about an analyst arriving. There's talk about a physio arriving to replace a couple of the guys who've gone.
Yeah, I mean, that's worth pointing out, isn't it? Because the Chris Morgan, who is the or was the first team physio, left to go back to Liverpool. So
yes, and the rehab coach Tim Parham has also gone. Mm. So you know, there is a bit of a gap there, and there's been talk about the Brazilian guy from PSG, Bruno Mazziotti, I think his name is, who is very well regarded as far as I have managed to ascertain thus far. Quite a tough nut, maybe, you know, someone a bit more in that sort of Darren Burgess mould, someone who's sort of quite disciplined in the way he approaches things, which you can see sitting quite well with Arteta potentially. So that will be interesting. I do wonder if he might add more kind of technical staff. He's obviously got Steve Round and Albert, who's very, very close to, and they have an excellent working relationship. If they supplement that with someone else, I mean, the rumour that's been doing the rounds was Dennis, wasn't it?
Yeah. I only saw the rumor on Twitter this morning, so I have no idea how true it might be. Do you?
Mm. I have to say, I don't know anything about it. Mm. It's not something I'd heard until I saw elsewhere. I'd be a little bit surprised and happy to admit I'm wrong if it doesn't happen, but I would just feel like... I don't know. There's in a positive sense, but there is a kind of emotional baggage around Dennis that I wonder if Arteta would want to bring in. I don't know.
Yeah.
It's just my perception.
I think he's spoken, hasn't he, about wanting to work with the young players. So I don't know if it would be something that would be a first team appointment. I'm not sure.
Right. I mean, I could see, something... alongside, you know, working with Per maybe on the academy would be really interesting. I mean, they may add another goalkeeper coach. So Sal Bibo has been there for a couple of years. He came from Reading. He was actually appointed by Jerry Payton, I believe. So he's actually been there, you know, through the whole of Unai Emery's reign and a little bit longer. And that's just a case of the new guy probably wanting his people, really. And Iñaki Caña has got his own approach to the goalkeeping coaching, and I imagine that'll be reflected in whatever appointment is made there. But interesting, I think, that both he and the set pieces guy came from Brentford, and you know, Brentford have been widely praised for a very modern approach to, you know, data and coaching and, you know, the structure of their team, their youth team. I don't think us borrowing elements from them is coincidence, and I think that's probably quite a promising development.
Mm, okay, well, we'll see how that plays out. What else has been going on? I mean, we had the news about Gabriel too from Lille. Phone calls from Mikel Arteta. Edu doing the do and convincing his fellow Brazilian that Arsenal is the place to be. I mean, that's something that's expected to go through this week.
Yeah, everything seems agreed on that. And, you know, there was competition for his signature, principally Napoli, who always seems to be going for the same players as us. I don't know what that's about, but Pepe and Tierney and a couple of others, I recall, it was sort of, he must decide between Arsenal and Napoli.
Was it Napoli who signed Higuain in the summer that we were supposed to be signing him? Yeah.
It was. I don't know what that indicates. Maybe we kind of have similar relative standing across the two leagues. I don't know.
Potentially.
But, you know, Everton were in for Gabriel in a big way as well. And there was talk about Manchester United. I'm not sure how serious that was. Yeah. They have a tendency to kind of get in touch at the last minute and be like, what's going on here? As far as I can tell, they sort of ring on last second. Are you going to Arsenal? Okay. I'll just check in about that.
Yeah.
Thanks.
It's like walking down the street. What are you guys queuing for here?
That's exactly it. Yeah.
What's happening?
Ed Woodward going around asking people what they're queuing for, basically.
What's at the top of the queue there? I'll just stand here, see what happens.
I'll just wait in the queue and see. It seems interesting. But listen, I think that's a good signing, right? We all wanted a centre-half. And we have gone out and got one, despite our inability thus far to get rid of one. Which,
yeah, I mean, that's kind of going to be a bit of a problem because they're piling up like old cars in a junkyard, aren't they?
Incredible. We've got so many now. So many.
So we've got Saliba, Luiz, Socrates, Holding, Chambers, Mustafi. Who am I forgetting? Mavropanos.
We own Mavropanos. And we have Gabriel as well.
Well, Gabriel coming in. So that's sort of... Well, with Mavropanos gone, that'd be seven at the club right now. Yeah.
We're playing a back three by default, aren't we? We're just sort of desperately
We're moving to a back six. Got to give everybody some game time.
Four centre-halves and two fullbacks. I mean, I'll give it a whirl. But I think, yeah, that is a good signing, though. He's in the right age bracket. It's not an astronomical amount of money. It's sort of the sort of signing that you look at and think, that's kind of the sort of deal Arsenal probably should be trying to do. You know, 23, experienced in playing in one of Europe's, you know, decent leagues. On the radar for the Brazilian national squad. I think it makes a lot of sense. It does make me think, it does make me sort of query Pablo Mari a little bit.
Yes, me too. Me too.
Not that you can't have two left-footed centre-backs.
I forgot to include him in our list of
centre-backs. Well, there you go. Does that tell its own story?
But
I only say that in that I know that Gabriel was someone Arsenal were very aware of and have watched a lot and were interested in last Christmas. And they did Pablo Mari, I think partly because of the structure of the deal, they were able to kind of loan him with certain financial obligations and lots of coughing around it.
Yeah, sorry.
But nonetheless, it is interesting to go, I will go and get Gabriel as well. And look, maybe they'll both play every game, but I'm not so sure.
Yeah, it's weird because, I know we've talked about this before, but you don't see two left-footed centre-halves playing. I mean, you might, if you've got a back three, you could have one in the middle and one on the left-hand side of it. Yeah. But it's really rare to see two left-footed central defenders play together.
Also, I find it hard to imagine a back three kind of without David Luiz in it, you know? And I think part of the advantage of the back three is that you can sort of hide Luiz in there because he gives you so much else on the ball. Mm. And I don't think Gabriel or Mari can match that. So, it'll be really interesting to see. I mean, they've got a couple of questions about the composition of central defence, so maybe we'll leave that for part two. But all in all, that looks to me like a solid acquisition. We've said that so many times about centre-backs in the past, but...
Yeah. So there have been some other interesting little links as well to midfielders. There was a story about how we have made a bid for Owa. The pirate footballer himself, joining the Arsenal, and on the Batman podcast. Very interesting player. And I saw a story over the weekend, which I suspect is complete and utter bullshit, but obviously would be rather nice if it were true. A story linking us to Thiago from Bayern Munich.
Thiago Alcantara.
Yeah.
That would be fun. For sure.
Yeah, I mean, what a good player he is.
And he is seemingly leaving Bayern. Liverpool, well, by the way, these coughs are not to indicate anything bad. That's just natural cough. I feel like we need to distinguish now. But
mine were natural. Liverpool. Definitely not.
But yeah, Liverpool seemingly the front runners there. I mean, that is a signing that, you know, it falls into the kind of Willian on a lot of money for, you know, at the wrong end of his career. But I just have to hold my hands up and say I would like to watch Thiago play for Arsenal. I am guilty as far as that's concerned.
Yeah, but I mean, you look at the profile of midfielder that we're after. Did we have a question on this? I think we might have, so I might as well just do it here if I can find it. It comes from Dom, who's at Dom C0801. And he says, if you were in charge of Arsenal's transfers and you could only sign one type of midfielder, would you sign a Thomas Partey midfielder or a Hassem Oar type midfielder? I think Oar's skill set are more in demand at Arsenal personally.
It's a good question because it depends on who goes, I think. I mean, it also depends on what happens with Dani Ceballos because... you know, if you look at Partey, he's someone who you imagine be playing a little bit deeper in the midfield, or, you know, someone who could help form the base there alongside a Ceballos or a Xhaka. But if you've lost Ceballos, you might need someone in there, you know, next to Xhaka or instead of Xhaka, especially because the futures of Guendouzi and Torreira are not exactly certain. So even though I sort of instinctively go, oh, creativity, we need creativity, I also think the other end of the midfield could do with a bit of work too. So it's really, really hard to say. I mean, someone who could do both would be really nice.
Yeah, or, you know, one of each would be good, I suppose. But, like, just from a purely aesthetic point of view, you know, I would prefer an OR kind of player than Partey, just in terms of what they can deliver on the ball, you know. But I think there's room for both, to be honest, in that midfield. And certainly the midfield is the key area. I mean, if we've made our defensive signing, and I think it will be a defensive signing, the focus now has to turn to the middle of the park, doesn't it? Because those situations need to be sorted out with Torreira, with Guendouzi, with Ceballos, if he's coming back or if he's not. You know, if you bring in OA, for example, do you need Ceballos? Or can you even afford to do Ceballos? The other side of that is, like, after a season, he'd be fairly well settled, Ceballos. So I don't know. It doesn't sound like there's much going on between Arsenal and Real Madrid at the moment. But then, you know, these things can turn pretty quickly. Yeah,
it's. I mean, there's room for all these players in the midfield, but there's almost certainly not room for them in the budget. And I mean, we had a question about this, but I might get it up now because I feel like it's pretty relevant.
Okay.
Let me have a little look. Where is it? It's from Scott McMurdo on Twitter. And Scott said, are you guys worried at the lack of noise / rumours regarding players that we all think will be on the move? Guendouzi, Torreira, Kolasinac, etc. Any concerns on leaving it too late in the window, especially if this is to fund incoming players?
Yeah, we had a couple of questions like that on the Discord as well from Wallan and Serenity, basically asking the same thing. Are you worried about the lack of outgoings? I'm not worried yet because I recognise that, you know, the market is a strange one. I was going to say it's only just open, but it opened on July 27th. So it's been open a month now. It doesn't feel to me like a lot has happened, though. Does it? No. I mean, you know, maybe I'm just sort of blind to what's going on, but it doesn't feel like there have been any significant moves or a quantity of moves, I should say. I know some clubs have made signings and what have you, but it doesn't feel like the market has really got going yet, does it?
Not hugely so, and maybe that's partly because some of the big hitters have still been engaged in competition until last night. But it does alarm me a little bit. Not alarm, it worries me a little bit. Just because I do think that Arsenal do need to move players on for what I would call the sort of next phase of their transfer business. It feels like they've got Willian in, they've got Gabriel in. I think to get the kind of quality of central midfield player we're talking about here, they've got to be pretty confident that someone's going to go, I would think.
Yeah.
From a budgetary perspective. And I don't know. It doesn't fit. Say, like, the most saleable asset we have is someone like Matteo Guendouzi. It doesn't feel like people are battering down the door for him. You know, it feels like he's being sort of offered to every club in Europe in a part exchange deal. And so far, no one's bitten.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's true. But I wonder if, you know, when a player like Guendouzi, where it's really well known that he is surplus to requirements or Arsenal want to get rid of him for whatever reason, the stuff that's gone on behind the scenes, if you're a club who's potentially interested in him, you know, there's the balance between, you're not in a hurry. There's the balance between, like, okay, let's get the deal done because it's a deal that we can do or would like to do, and maybe we can get it done before another club comes in, or you just wait, you sit and you sit and you sit, and the closer it gets to deadline day, the less wiggle room Arsenal have when it comes to negotiating. If they really want to get rid of him, you know, they're going to have to perhaps take whatever the hell is on offer. So I think quite a lot of the outgoings will happen late in the window. And from that point of view, it may well also have an impact on some of the incomings. Because, you know, if you bring in players who are very obviously replacements for other people, you have that same situation with Guendouzi, don't you? Where you just don't have any real leverage when it comes to negotiations.
Yeah, it's a delicate thing. I mean, clearly he's going to go. Well, it seems almost certain. But I suppose, as Arsene Wenger was used to say, there are always three parties involved and it's got to be right for everyone.
Mm.
But I think that... I just worry that the club will waver before committing to more spending until they have certain sort of financial guarantees in terms of who's going.
Mm.
And that's not something I know definitively, but yeah. You know, it's just my impression.
Well, we had a question, well, not so much a question, but a reminder from Amit Tooney, who says, you haven't done the net spend for this summer's transfers yet.
Oh, wow.
Eyes, the looky eyes emoji. He said, you also need to check how your predictions went previously. Well, look, you know, that's too much to ask. A, I don't know where they are. B, I can't remember what they were. And I don't know even where to start looking. When did we last do it? Was it January? Was it last year? I can't remember.
Somebody, I don't know. Did he mean the score predictions for the end of the season? That's so far in the past now. Nobody cares.
I think we did that. I think we did do the predictions. Maybe. Anyway, look, it's over. It's done with. Let's forget about last season. Let's look forward.
Okay.
You know, to a bright future.
Let's predict the results of all 38 Premier League games.
Starting with Fulham versus Arsenal. Okay, so yeah, we would net spend for this summer's transfers.
So, what have we spent on Gabriel? What are people calling that fee in pounds?
30 million euros, there or thereabouts.
Okay. Which currently is 27 million sterling.
Right.
According to this calculator.
Okay.
Okay. And so, I mean, the perverse thing about this, of course, is that we're probably calling Willian free, aren't we?
Yeah, I mean, look, we're dealing with transfer fees here, you know.
Yeah.
We can do the free thing with regards to Willian, if you like. Perhaps some coughing, maybe, if you'd like to.
Okay.
Don't mind.
A tickly throat.
Yeah, a tickly throat. Yeah. Free. But, look, it is. So we're dealing only in transfer fees here. So how much do you think Arsenal are going to spend, and how much do you think Arsenal will recoup?
Okay, I think Arsenal will recoup.
I like the way you're starting with the recouping.
Yeah.
It shows you've a sharp mind, James. You think differently.
Well, I think it because it sort of determines for me how much they can spend. I think they'll recoup. I'm going to say £65 million.
Yeah. Wow.
That's ambitious.
That is.
This is there's a degree of what I hope will happen here as well, but I can justify it. I can break it down.
Go on.
It's actually, the fees aren't that crazy when you break it down. I was sort of was thinking about 25 million for Guendouzi.
Right.
About 25 for Torreira.
Right.
About 10 for Emi Martinez.
What? What are you talking about selling Emi Martinez? What are you hearing? What's the inside info? Tell me at once.
I just think a goalkeeper will go. I just think a goalkeeper might go.
All right. So you're already at 85 million.
Am I?
Yeah.
Oh, no, I'm not.
Yeah, 25 for Guendouzi. Oh, no, you're not. Yeah. Sorry. I added one in there. I added in another 25 million on Ainsley Maitland-Niles.
Right, so I've not got that. So right. I don't know. Again, this is pure speculation. I just am thinking maybe, I don't know, there'll be a late change of heart or something. Okay. And then I'm thinking like 5 million on like somebody. Like
Rob Holding.
In my head, it's Rob Holding. Yeah. Yeah. In my head, it's Rob Holding. I know that doesn't sound a lot, but that's what I'm saying is that gives me. See, that's what I'm saying. That sounded a lot, 65, but none of those fees are exorbitant, I would say.
That's true. I'd want
and
more
maybe
than,
Torreira stays and Maitland-Niles goes or something like that.
I'd want more than 10 million for Emi Martinez, I have to say.
So would I. Yeah. I don't know if we'd get it. But what about you? So then incomings, by the way, this is where it gets exciting.
Well, that is your... Oh, sorry. Yeah. That's incoming funds. You're talking about incoming players.
Incoming players.
You're mixing it all up here, man. Jesus.
40, 90. I'm going to say that Arsenal will spend 70 million quid.
Okay. So that's on top
of... Two midfielders, basically.
Two midfielders. Okay, I'm going to say...
So that would leave them with a net spend of, what, you know, 32 or something in fees. Is that right?
Well, no, you said they'd recoup 65 million and then spend 70 million, and that's 5 million. That's a net spend of 5.
Yeah, but they also bought Gabriel.
But you weren't including that. You're talking about another 70 million on top of the 30 million, or the 27 million.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Your total spend is going to be like... Whatever that is, £97 million.
Correct.
Right. Ooh. Okay. I reckon. I reckon we'll spend 80 million in total.
Right.
And we'll recoup. I think 20, 25, 65. I reckon we'll recoup. Probably about 70. I'm thinking. Because I thought what you said sounded like a lot, and then when you laid it out, you know, if you are going to sell Guendouzi, if you are going to sell Maitland-Niles, which seems to be the case, Torreira, Holding could go.
60 million between those three, easily.
Yeah, Holding could go, Chambers could go. You could see that stack up, so... I'm going to say 70 there, but I do wonder if we're going to be miles off because there could be a lot of swap deals involved in what happens.
Yeah, I mean, what I'm thinking is, like, in theory, that all sounds good, but, I mean, actually finding buyers, even at those levels, I don't think will be particularly easy.
Mm.
And we don't have a sense. I mean, someone said to me yesterday, players are moving for... 20-30% less than expected thus far.
Okay.
But listen, I mean, I think what we can ascertain from that, other than that I'm not very good at maths, is that there is fluidity potentially in this Arsenal squad.
Yeah. Yeah, true.
You know,
true.
There are cash assets that we could chivvy along.
Yeah. So, I mean, there are. I mean, there are decisions that can be made, I think, as we've said previously, about pretty much all the players. There are very few of them who are completely untransferable or, you know, that we simply have to keep. I think you've got to listen to offers for everybody, pretty much everybody. So it'll be interesting to see if some offers are made for players we don't necessarily want to go. We didn't mention Lacazette as a potential departure either. He's certainly somebody who's been linked... with a move away, Juventus strongly linked with him. So we could be miles out, actually, in terms of what we actually bring in.
We might be rich after this window as a club.
Just don't spend anything and sell everyone and all the financial problems are gone away. Stan and Josh will be super happy. As it stands, you've got a net spend of 22 million and I've got a net spend of 10 million. So we'll see how wide of the mark we are.
Yeah, I mean, I think, well, who knows? Maybe 22 million even in this market is too much. Because the other thing is you've got to factor in things like, you know, Willian's salary, potentially Aubameyang's salary, you know, the inability to move on Mesut Ozil. So there are lots of different factors to consider that will affect things. But I think there'll be more movement, should we put it like that, between now and the end of the window,
They've got a lot to do, don't they? They've got a lot of work to do. they probably need to hire some people, you know, workload, spread it out a bit, you know, get a bit of help in, a few interns, maybe. All right. Will we leave it there for part one?
Yes.
Okay.
Let's leave it there.
Let's leave it there. We'll be back with your questions and more in part two right after this.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
It's a brand new year, and what better time to get going with that online store you've been thinking of? Those "I was there when Arsenal actually scored a goal" t-shirts would fly off the shelves right now. And to get yourself up and running, you need Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way through to the did we hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms, and sell more with less effort with thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 a month trial period at shopify.com/arsblog, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/arsblog now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/arsblog. Welcome back to the Arscast Extra. This is part two of the show where we answer the questions that you sent to us on Twitter at Gunnerblog and at Arsblog. Also on the Arsblog Discord chat server, which you get access to if you are an Arsblog member on Patreon. I forgot to do Facebook again, so I'm very sorry. I'm going to start with this one, though, James. It comes from Twitter. It comes from Kaleem Khan, who's at Kaleem_AK. And he says, what do you think our team will look like for the Community Shield game? Will Arteta rest players for the start of the season or go for it and try and build confidence with a win? And there was another sort of follow-up kind of question on that. It comes from John Craven. Oh, he did it the news round, didn't he? He's _JRC1992. I mean, it can't be the real John Craven, can he?
The year of his retirement. No, I strongly doubt that is the real John
Craven. Oh, my goodness. Well, yeah, he's still around, John Craven, so you never know. Who knew he was a massive gooner? Anyway, he says, do you know why Arsenal are having such an empty preseason? Liverpool, for example, will have played two friendlies before the Charity Shield or the Community Shield next season, whereas we will have played none. One game in preseason feels short. Should we be worried about being underprepared? So let's deal with the team for the game on Saturday first, and then our unpreparedness or otherwise.
We're back. We're back talking about teams. So, what can we say about the team? Certain people aren't going to be available. Gabriel, for example, presumably will be in quarantine. You would like to think. I think he has to be. Bernd Leno, will he be available? I guess he will. That'll be an interesting one. Who plays in goal?
Yeah.
God, start with an easy one, eh?
Yeah.
I think it will be Bernd Leno. I just think that he is the number one. And I think he will still be regarded as such. So I'm going to say Leno. What do you think, Ingo?
Yeah.
It's harsh, though.
It is, maybe. But I mean, I wonder I wonder what the state of play is, you know, for the senior players who are coming back. They've, I think, been back since the weekend, getting their, you know, various checks and tests and all that kind of stuff. And preseason training begins officially today, something like that. I'm not 100% sure, but it doesn't feel like there's been a massive break since the end of the season. It was August the 1st, obviously, was the FA Cup final, so players go away and they have a little bit of time away and everything else. I mean, what about the players who've been away and on holidays and things like that? I mean, did they have to isolate or quarantine, or would they have been given
Depends where they've been.
Does it depend where they've been or where they come back from? Because,
well, that's a good question, because there's all sorts of stories about Premier League footballers crossing borders to fly home from other places to make their lives easier. I think the official return to training was Saturday, the 22nd.
Right.
So, or at least that's when they certainly had to report back. So, which gives them just a week until the Community Shield. I mean, I think this Community Shield, maybe more so than any other Community Shield in history, will have that friendly feel, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it's I'd say it's probably a game we could do without, to be honest. You know, this could have been a weekend where we might have played a behind closed doors friendly against, you know, a Brentford or a team like that, you know. Having to play Liverpool at Wembley in what some people regard as a competitive game, but obviously it isn't.
It's kind of annoying for Arteta to have to do his preparations in such a public manner.
You know? Kinda, yeah. I mean, I think he, you know, there are obviously, or there is a need to start playing games and to get some match fitness into the legs. So I don't know that anybody is going to play more than 45 minutes.
No, so maybe it's moot about the goalkeepers. But I think I'll go with Leno for the sake of argument. In defence, what have we got?
Well, what haven't we got in defence, James? I mean, we've got so many fucking defenders.
David Luiz, I imagine, will play. I'm going to say that...
Looking to concede his first penalty of the new season?
Yes, of course. Get off to a flying start. I'm going to say Saliba will play.
Ooh, a debut. Nice.
To make up for him missing the French Cup final, he will have the honour of partaking in the Community Shield. And I'm going to say, as the third centre half...
Ooh, we're going with a back three, I see.
I think so. I'm going to say...
Well, I mean, who's it going to be? Because, like, Mustafi's injured.
Saliba's going to play on the right, I would say, of three. And then Luiz will play in the centre.
It could be Tierney.
I think it could be Tierney as the left-sided centre-back. That's what I think it'll be at the back. What do you think it'll be at the back?
Don't care.
Right.
Could not give a fuck about this game. Like, I really don't. It'll be on and I'll watch it and things like that. But, I just feel like it's a training game. And
what if we win, though?
Oh, it's a trophy. 100%. Yeah. First trophy of the new season. Yeah, of course. Three trophies.
For Arteta in finals. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Arteta's been holding up the two fingers.
Two major honours.
I'm looking forward to it. I think I don't expect to learn a great deal from it.
No, but I'm looking forward to hearing from Arteta because I haven't really heard from him in the last few weeks for obvious reasons. I'm sort of looking forward to hearing from him this week to sort of get an idea of what he's thinking and what he's planning and you know, what we do with the squad that we have for Saturday might be quite telling because, you know, if Holding is going to leave, maybe he won't be in the squad. Or, you know, if Chambers is not ready, he's coming back from his injury. Socrates, will he be in the squad or is he on his way to Napoli? What's happening with Torreira? Players that you want or are potential departures, can you run the risk of them, you know, twanging a hammy or doing something much worse in a game that doesn't mean a goddamn thing in the grand scheme of things? So who is available and who he picks? I mean, it would not surprise me at all if there was a smattering of senior players among a whole host of young academy players.
Well, they've been training longer, the academy boys. They've been back a little while longer, I think an extra week at least. So will we finally see George Lewis take to the field in an Arsenal shirt? I mean, I'm only half joking. I do wonder if some of these guys might be involved.
Would that not require a little bit of a, you know, consultation between, let's say, the two managers, where Mikel Arteta picks up the phone to old Kloppy there, you know, and just gives him a ring and says, look, come on, just, you know.
What are we doing?
Yeah. Are we taking this seriously or not? You know, are you going to play the? You going to play the good guys? You going to play the? You know, the Salah. We got a Salah of our own over the weekend, by the way.
True.
So there you go. Building the Liverpool way, I guess. But you know, that kind of a conversation might be useful for Mikel Arteta when it comes to picking his team. Like if Klopp says, "Look, you know, we'll give some people a run out, but we're going to play some young players as well." You probably have a bit more scope to ease your senior players back into action, because, you know, the last thing you need is, it's not that these guys are coming back like they used to, like footballers used to come back from their summer holidays packing a beer belly and, you know, pounds and pounds overweight. It's not quite the same thing, but at the same time, you need to sort of manage their fitness and get them ready for the start of the new season without causing any damage.
Yeah, and look, assessments will be made on all those players in the coming days. So it is almost impossible to pick a team. But for the 10 people who care, I will finish it.
Oh, yeah, you do that because I can't be arsed.
So wing-backs, I'll say Bellerin and Saka will be the wing-backs. Then I think it'll be Xhaka and someone else, Joe Willock, maybe.
Don't forget, we've got you know, Emile Smith Rowe. He'll be back with us this season,
and yeah,
you know, potentially somebody who could become part of our midfield conversations. You know, I know we're talking about Guendouzi going and Torreira going, and there are question marks in other areas too, and players that we've got to bring in. But maybe Smith Rowe might be somebody who, I don't know. Quite what the plan is. That's why I'm curious to hear from Mikel Arteta about some of these things. You know, he did very well at Huddersfield. Was that enough? Was that enough playing time, enough development for him to be considered somebody who, you know, might play something of a Joe Willock role next season for us?
Yeah, I don't know. It could be. I think he'll go with front three that played the cup final, Pepe, Aubameyang, Lacazette. But like you say, there's Smith Rowe, there's Willian. Maybe he will go with the back four and try and get an extra creative midfielder in there. That will be one of the interesting things, you know, having sort of been quite consistent with the back three towards the end of last season, whether or not he kicks off this season with it, I think could be of some significance.
Who's playing up front, did you say?
I think the three guys who played the cup final, Pepe and Lacazette and Aubameyang.
Really?
Yeah, probably.
Seems, well, I mean, soon, doesn't it?
I guess, but what else are you going to... I mean, who else are they going to put out? Genuinely, I mean, it's sort of, you know...
Don't know. It's a strange...
I mean, Aubameyang is such an athlete that I sort of think he'll be fine. I sort of imagine he turns up on day one just ready to play 38 games.
Yeah.
But yeah, it is a really odd one, and hopefully we can make an absolute shed load of changes and no one has to actually play 90 minutes.
Yeah.
Let's have this question, because I mentioned it in part one, but we didn't get to it. Jan Zurovsky on Twitter says, many fans are hugely excited, and rightly so, with the prospect of Saliba and Gabriel's partnership at the centre of Arsenal's defence. How soon will they actually start together, though? Saliba is a big talent, but still only 19. Gabriel has a 14-day quarantine to go through. So how much do you think we'll see of them as a duo next year?
Right. Good question. I don't know. I mean, it feels like, you know, if Gabriel arrives and we've brought in Saliba, you know, projecting forward and putting my most optimistic hat on when it comes to the future development of these two players, it's the kind of central defensive partnership that would make you excited because of the, you know, what it might signify in terms of the way we're going to build a team and the profiles of the players. You know, these are big, athletic, mobile, modern central defenders, you know, in terms of their physicality. How they perform on the ball is something we'll wait and see. But I don't quite know how much we'll see of them straight away. But it feels a little bit to me like if we're buying a left-footed player like Gabriel and we've brought in Saliba and hopes are high for him, it just feels like the kind of partnership that would work together. You know, hopefully, ideally. I mean, it doesn't always. I mean, you have to wait and see how these players fare together. You know, what looks like a good partnership on paper sometimes doesn't quite work. You know, the last really good central defensive partnership that we had was Koscielny and Mertesacker. You know?
Yeah.
And that's some time ago now. So it's something that we've really needed for quite a while. So, yeah, look, I'm hopeful. I'm optimistic, but cautiously so, because I think we have to be realistic as well about, you know, what Saliba can do in his first season in England. And he needs time to develop as a player and a person as well. So it's trying to temper your excitement at what they might be versus what they might need to become that, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I think I would sort of feel confident saying that maybe by the end of the season, that might be, you know, what we're looking at as a central defensive partnership. Mm. But I don't think we necessarily will be in the early months of the season. I actually think it's probably Saliba of the two, even though he's maybe the more heralded arrival, who will probably need a bit more time just because of his age. I mean, you know, Gabriel has played more football. He's several years older. I think he will come in almost immediately, is my, you know, impression. I think Saliba might be introduced a little bit more gradually than that. But it is encouraging to have two young centre-halves with considerable pedigree, you know, to pin our hopes on. That is a positive step for sure.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, my question, which I should have in front of me here, shouldn't I? Where is it? Okay, yeah, it comes from WCampo33 on the Discord, and he says, "Hi guys, quick question about age as it relates to football players. For example, Willian and Aubameyang." Excuse me. "We're seeing pro athletes in other sports extend careers longer and longer. 20 years ago, the thought of Roger Federer still being at the top of the game at almost 40 would be laughable. Do you think that with today's training programs and better understanding of how to take care of your body, we'll see players play longer at peak levels?"
I think it's possible. But then I think that oftentimes the people who get cited in these situations are outliers. So people might be like, look at Jamie Vardy. But it's like, that's just Jamie Vardy,
yeah.
You know, or Roger Federer. Yeah, Roger Federer is still playing at 40, but he's Roger Federer. I think that there are exceptional people who, you know, can sort of surpass those expectations, but I wouldn't be confident to say it's a trend yet.
Yeah.
Just because there's some high-profile examples. Do I think Aubameyang can be one of those? I do, and I have to hope so. I do think he can. What about you?
I just think that there are always going to be some outliers, you know, when it comes to footballers and professional sports. There are going to be some people who can play for much longer than others. But generally speaking, once a player gets to a certain age, you know, the years catch up with them. And physically, some of the things which make them top level go away, you know. So I don't know that there's any miracle cure for that, but I do see the point that, you know, with proper training and health and nutrition and all of the science and all of the stuff that's available to top athletes now, it feels like if you really, really wanted to take care of yourself to maximize the duration of your career, you've got a much better chance of doing it.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, I put this to a Premier League physio not too long ago, and I sort of had this impression as well. And I said, you know, do you think it's getting easier for older players? And they were like, no, it's getting harder. They were like, the game is more athletic and more driven towards people in their youth, in their prime. And so keeping pace with that is maybe more difficult. I think you could look at it two ways. I think Aubameyang is one of those exceptional athletes who could do it. By the way, just on John Craven's question about our empty pre-season, I saw a reply to his question on Twitter from Adam Hucklesby, who pointed out that while Liverpool would have played two games before the Community Shield, they did finish their season a week before us, right? Because we had the cup final. So it's just kind of a staggered preparation there. And also, I think while publicly we might look at Arsenal's pre-season and think, oh, crikey, you know, there's not a lot going on, I think we know from our experience that, you know, it's quite straightforward for a club to organise a behind-closed-doors game. And in these COVID times, that makes a lot more sense, right? That there'll be friendlies happening that maybe we don't even know about until they've happened. So I don't think that's a cause for particular alarm. And the problems we face are shared by every team in the Premier League.
Okay.
At least.
All right. I think it's your question.
Oh, right, okay, yeah. So let's have this one.
You sounded like a
this
car.
This one is... have you seen that commentary on Armand Traore's run in the Europa League?
The Spanish guy doing the car.
The Spanish guy who is commentating and then he just gives up and just does a motorbike or car. It's great. More of that. BT Sport, more of that, please.
more sound effects, less McManaman. I think that's what we want.
Please, that would be good.
Get the dude from the Police Academy movies. The guy who used to do all the sound effects.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Yeah.
I once introduced him at a gig. I
Get out
him
here.
On stage.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
In London. Very odd, very surreal. Lots of Police Academy fans there. But he went on and did noises. Fair play to him.
I mean,
they
that's
are
what he
really
does.
Good noises. You know what you're going to get from him? It's noises. There was a guy at the back being who sort of was insistent that he wasn't doing it, that someone was just sort of playing sound effects out of the speakers and he was just kind of miming into the mic.
That seems like a much more complicated way of doing it.
That's very true, yeah. Requires so much subterfuge in organisation. So this question is from a man whose name is spelt in Russian lettering, so I cannot pronounce it, but his Twitter handle is at DVVGpodcast. And they say, I've got a feeling that Arsenal are becoming more and more Brazilian. Do you have such feelings? Does it concern you?
Do I have a feeling? I mean, look, we've got...
And does it concern you, Andrew?
No. I mean, it doesn't concern me. I mean, there is Martinelli, there's Luis, there's Willian, there's Edu... But then, you know, we were...
this physio.
Yeah, the physio. But then, you know, there's a lot of English guys there. There's, you know, some Spanish there. There used to be a load of French guys. So, you know, I think clubs go through little phases of bringing in players from certain countries and what have you. But no, it doesn't concern... Should it concern me? Should it, James?
I don't think so.
Okay.
Brazilians are nice, aren't they? I mean, you know, Arseblog's own Tim Stillman married one. So
there you go.
I think we're okay with Brazilians. I think it's potentially a good thing. Like, you know, to have a little... I mean, if it keeps people happy, South Americans haven't always settled brilliantly at Arsenal and in England. And having, you know, a little bit of a community helps. You know, it helped... You know, Edu, when he was as here as a player, that Gilberto was here at the same time and things like that. I just think it's, you know, it's natural. And Willian comes from clubs like Shakhtar and Chelsea, which fostered that sort of little Brazilian enclave. And having a little bit of that in North London, if it helps us get the next big talent that comes out of Brazil, then so be it.
Don't we already, we already have him?
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
Thank goodness Willian joined on a free.
Yeah, I was going to say, just checking. By the way, I feel like I must comment on this because I don't know if you've seen, while we've been talking on Twitter, an Arsenal fan claims that they have Gabriel on a traffic camera near Luton. tracing his arrival. How mad is all this, by the way? I'm sure you saw the thing doing the rounds of, like, the picture of Gabrielle in a car and people sort of looking at the clouds out the window and trying to decipher where he was based on that. Or maybe you're just blissfully ignorant of the madness that has descended.
No, I saw it. I saw it. It is...
frightening?
Potentially. I mean, look... fair play to people who go to such lengths to try and uncover transfer information and what have you. I mean, I'm sure it helps pass the time and stuff. So it is a bit mad, though, you know.
If either of us are ever taken hostage, at least we can rest assured that the Arsenal online community will find us within minutes.
If they feel so minded.
If they're so inclined.
They might just let us.
There may be some debate about that.
Yeah. The plastic bag that they have over James's head is from a particular shop which only sells typewriter ribbons. And it's in some place in, you know, a small village in Italy. So it must be from there. We'll track him down to there.
The saw they've used to remove James's testicles has a for sale, a discount sign on it. It can be traced. I mean, we will see. But yes, it is kind of amazing. I sort of, I look at it in awe. Let's put it like that.
Mm.
Awe and fear.
Okay, here is a question from Sarthak, who's at This Arsenal Week on Twitter. And he says, do you think signing youth players that were let go by other clubs is a good idea because they are mentally more determined to prove themselves as professionals and it might be their last chance? So to put it in context, we've signed a young defender who was let go by Tottenham. We've signed a midfielder who was let go by Huddersfield Town.
Huddersfield, that's
George
right.
Lewis was told, go find yourself a club in the Norwegian fourth division. And he now is at Arsenal. And the kid that we mentioned earlier on, our very own Salah, was let go by Feyenoord back in February or March sometime, apparently because of a dispute over something or other, I don't quite know. So we are kind of, you know, hustling around in a, I'm going to say a strange way, but we're looking for players who have been told by other clubs, no, it's not happening for you here. Are we hoping to sort of uncover a rough diamond?
A diamond in the rough. I think there's a few things happening here. So one is, I mean, I think the main one is that a lot of our good academy players have gone out on loan or they're in the first team. So the under-23s in particular, ahead of next season, were looking a little bit depleted. And so bringing in players who, you know, in that age bracket helps that side be a bit more competitive and gives a platform to the guys you really want to work on the development of. I also think there's an element of trying to get deals done. It's very boring, but basically related to Brexit in terms of sort of shifting the scouting profile away from players under 18, because it will be illegal for us to sign players from Europe who are under 18 after December. So we are looking at, you know, we've sort of refocused our efforts on the kind of 18 to 21 age group, which are these players I think are within. And I think also it's just a bit of a gamble. And to be honest, I sort of can't really see how it will cost Arsenal a great deal if they lose, you know?
I mean, do you think, or are you aware of this, you know, becoming... I mean, if you brought in one player like that, you might say, okay, you know, we see an opportunity here, or we've seen this player in the past. He's played against us at youth level. Yeah. They're letting him go. Let's give him a shout, give him a shot and see what he's like. If you do one of those, you go, okay, you know, it's just a bit of a gamble. You see what happens. But when it becomes part of a strategy, it seems like it's a clear idea being implemented. I mean, that must have been a conversation that they had, you know, at academy level.
Yeah, well, they dispensed with, long before they dispensed with the first team scouting group, they did that with the academy, and Steve Morrow and his team were moved on. And that was part of this sort of initiative, which, as far as I understand it, Per Mertesacker has been pretty directly involved with and leading to kind of change the approach to recruitment that Arsenal were taking at that level. It is clearly part of a strategy. It's going to be a really interesting one because some of these players, like you say, are real surprises that they've turned up at Arsenal. You know, the guy we took from Spurs, Dinzey, he was released from Tottenham. It's not like we wrested him from him particularly. The boy who came in from Huddersfield, Akinola, he was without a club. He was actually signed without a trial, just on the back of video analysis. So it is unusual, and it is a step in a new direction. It's funny, I mentioned Brentford earlier. It's something that they have done really, really successfully. You know, they've kind of put together a ragtag group of young players and put them out in a B team model, effectively. And quite a few of them have graduated to their first team. And even if they don't, they sell them on and make a bit of money. I mean, these guys will be signing sort of 2-year contracts. If after a year they're no good, but you can suddenly get a few hundred grand for them, that's fine as well. So, like I say, my position is that I sort of think Arsenal don't really have a huge amount to lose. And I think it is also just a consequence of having sort of creamed the crop off the current academy lot, as it were. If they're good, they're probably in the first team squad at this point.
Yeah. Fair play.
What about... Okay, well, this is, again, on the academy. De Nerona says... is the news that Sam Greenwood is potentially leaving and Balogun moving on worrying? Those are two big prospects on the way out. Don't know if you've seen this Sam Greenwood story.
Yeah, look, I don't know, to be honest. Is it worrying? Look, I think we all have really high hopes for young players when they're coming through the academy. And the reality, of course, is that few of them will make it. And I say that as Arsenal have Nketiah, Maitland-Niles, Joe Willock, Bukayo Saka in the first team squad, Reece Nelson in the first team squad, who made it, you know, to that level via the academy. So, you know, I don't know. I mean, look, for young players, you can get decisions right. A lot of the time, you can get them wrong too. People have a lot of hope and expectation in some of these players, that it never really quite turns out the way you think it will. So I'm sort of easy enough about departures at youth level because I feel like the people making the decisions are good. If you know what I mean, I think Mertesacker is a very intelligent guy who, as much as possible, will want to keep the best players at Arsenal and find a way for them to make the breakthrough at first-team level. But sometimes players want to leave for other reasons, you know? Might not just be about playing time, might be personal. So who knows, you know?
That's a good shout. I mean, Sam Greenwood came down 2018 from Sunderland, I think, and there has been some suggestion that maybe he didn't settle particularly in the South. I think Arsenal will get a fee not too far below £1 million for him, which, you know, he's not set the world alight in his sort of year and a half or 2 years in the academy, so it's not too bad. So I can live with that. I think basically what you're seeing there with both Balogun and Greenwood, and I would rather Balogun stayed if any of them, but as far as I understand it, that situation still looks to be headed towards him leaving, not signing a new contract extension. You've got Eddie Nketiah and Gabriel Martinelli, who are both forwards, who are both not that much older and are both in the first team setup. And it does create a bit of a roadblock. And if Arsenal believe in those guys and want to invest in them, I could see why maybe the people just below are looking elsewhere.
Is it your turn? It's my turn. At Geezy Peas, hello to you, on Twitter, or G. He says, what are your thoughts on the fact that there won't be legal access to live coverage of all games, despite the fact that the majority of season ticket holders / away scheme members won't be permitted to attend most games for obvious reasons, even though they're hoping to get some fans back in the stadium by mid-October?
It feels weird, doesn't it? Having had access to all the games, To take that away, it does feel odd. And, you know, I mean, even, to be honest, even the journalists, I mean, not all journalists are getting into games. So I don't know what I'm going to do. I'll be like you, scrabbling around, like all you little rats, scrabbling around for a stream.
Somebody, please kidnap James now, you know.
Yeah.
Take him away. I'll be found
within minutes. But yeah, no, honestly, it's odd. And I think that the Premier League has an opportunity to address something that is an issue for them anyway. I mean, piracy is a real problem for the Premier League. And I don't blame anyone who pirates games that aren't televised. I completely understand that impulse. But, you know, clearly they have an issue with it. But, well, this is a chance for them to take ownership of the situation and make sure fans can watch matches in a way that benefits everybody financially. I mean, it just seems a little bit mad to not do that at this point, don't you think?
Yeah, well, I mean, if the reason we had all the games at the end of the season was because of the extraordinary circumstances, they're still kind of extraordinary. Like, this thing is still going on. You know, it hasn't gone away. All the precautions that are required and needed, you know, are still there in terms of, you know, contact tracing and tests for players. And all of those things are still there and will need to be there when fans are allowed back into the stadium, even on a limited basis. So I don't really understand why this should be a problem. Like, of all the things that they can fix at this moment in time, that seems like a really fucking easy one.
They fixed it pretty quick when they needed to. Do you know what I mean? For Project Restart, something that we'd always been told was impossible.
Yeah.
Just happened.
Yeah.
So why not do that again? I guess it's to do with contracts and, you know, blah, blah, blah. But it is really frustrating. And it's going to be weird, right, when games... I mean, how do you feel about sort of games being partially attended anyway? That's going to be quite odd in its own way. Have you sort of got used to the empty stadiums? Like, you know, three men and his dog being in there will feel strange, I suspect.
I guess so. I mean, how do they... I presume that this is something not just Arsenal are going to have to deal with, but every club. Like, how do they decide? Is it a sort of rota that, like, one home game, this... I don't know how many percent of our season ticket holders will be allowed in. So so if it's this 30%, then the next game it's the other 30%. So do you do it on a rotating basis? How exactly they're going to implement that, I don't know. You know, what are the deal going to be with seating? Where are people going to sit? How are you going to maintain social distancing? You know, all of these things, like even turnstiles. Even getting in, are people going to have to wear masks? You know, they're very enclosed little spaces, aren't they? When you come in through the turnstile, you put your ticket in you go. You have to push the thing. Are you allowed to touch the thing? If you touch the thing and somebody else touches it after, you know, I don't know. So it is going to be odd. All of it's going to be odd.
I would suspect going to a game in those early days of sort of trialling fans in stadiums is probably not going to be the relaxed, fun experience you might associate it with. Yeah. But the people I fear most for are, those who won't be at those games, who won't be able to see them. That is, feels very, very strange given where we have been with that.
Yeah, I think there are going to be some details this week in terms of how it's all going to work.
Right.
So we'll probably get some kind of a statement from the club. So there. Yeah, okay. Is it your turn or my turn? It's your turn, I think.
Maybe it's my turn. Okay, let me have a little look. I had a question here.
While you're looking for it, I noticed this one on the Discord from Gagan J, just in reference to what we were talking about earlier. He says, have you ever looked at a cloud in someone's photo and thought, that looks like a cloud that floated past my house earlier?
I haven't, but I'm starting to now as a consequence of all this stuff. I enjoyed this question from charlie.young on the Discord. And Charlie said, goodly morning, gents. If either of you were signing for a new team, what would you want your announcement video to look or sound like?
what would I want it to look or sound like? I would refuse to do an announcement video.
Really?
Yeah. I'd say, I'm here to play football, not act in your fucking bullshit videos. That's what I would say.
So you're saying you wouldn't play the piano?
I definitely wouldn't play the piano, for sure, unlike some people.
So, I would do the Lauren Koscielny. I'd have my old kit on. Let's say my arse blog kit. And then I'd pull that off and reveal my, I don't know, Arsenal Vision podcast kit underneath. And then I would pull that off. And then the camera would zoom out and I would just be fully naked. And then I'd run away. And that would be the video.
That would be pretty amazing. I think to really make that video, you would need to be wearing a pair of Wellington boots or something, because I think that would just add to the comedy effect of your ever decreasing arse getting smaller and smaller in the distance as you run away. I think that would
just
do.
Wobbling away in the distance.
Yeah,
that would be my, and you know, that would be a true unveiling video. I will have unveiled everything I had to offer the club.
Could jump out of a cake like a stripper or something like that. Maybe I'd do that one. That would be good.
Okay, singing "Happy Birthday, Mr. President" or something like that.
I think I have got a couple, because it feels like we're getting towards the end here now.
Feels that way.
Zach Taze on the Discord says, who would be the better duet? Gabriel Magalhães and Gabrielle, or Willian and Will I Am?
Great question. I have enjoyed all, I mean, I've done it myself, jokes about Gabrielle. And I've, as I've done them, like, you know, I think I said something about the unveiling video better be set to, I have one of her songs, I can't remember. I can't remember any of her songs now, can you?
Dreams. Didn't she?
Dreams Can Come True, Dreams. That's it, yeah.
And there's another one.
Out of Reach.
Out of Reach, that's the one.
But what I was thinking to myself is, I'm sure we must have done all these jokes, but 5 years ago, or whenever it was, that we signed Gabriel Paulista.
Yeah.
That, I suppose, tells you something about the lifespan of a joke. It sort of dies away and then you get another chance to do it.
Mm.
But who would be the better duet? Gabrielle. I'd say the two Gabrielles for me, because Will I Am, he's many things, but he's not got a beautiful voice. You know, so I feel like the harmonies on that end are going to struggle, whereas I feel like Gabrielle, vocally, she can do a lot of the heavy lifting.
Yeah.
And the Brazilians, are, you know, are a musical
people. They like the rhythm.
People.
That's samba
rhythm.
So I'm
sure Magalhães, or whatever his name is, can carry a tune along with her.
Yeah, and also I think, you know, we have to, if we're talking about this, recognise that Will.i.am was involved in perhaps one of the greatest crimes against music ever to be committed.
Which was?
Well, he was in Black Eyed Peas, right?
Oh, right, yeah.
And he,
yeah.
That fucking song.
Where is the love?
No, the Tonight's Gonna Be a Good Night song.
Oh.
I got a feeling. Fuck that song.
I thought of that earlier, because
forever.
The guy asked the question about the Brazilians. Do you remember it? It said, I've got a feeling.
Oh.
Ooh. That there are too many Brazilians in Arsenal. Yeah, it made me think of that. Right. That is a infuriating song.
Yeah, fuck that song. So, unfortunately, for Willian and Will I Am.
Do you think that could be the chant for Willian? I got a feeling that Willian's gonna be a bit shite.
It might. We'll have to ask the 30% of fans who are in the stadium to sing that. Get it going when fans are allowed.
That'll
back
be weird. Will they sing and stuff? Like, even though they all stood far away from each other, who knows?
Would Willian do a Will I Am song for his initiation?
If he doesn't, then
he's missing
he's
the trick.
Disgrace. Yeah, an absolute.
Willian does Will I Am, and Gabrielle will come in and do a Gabrielle song. So, final one.
Yeah.
I've got one here.
Final one.
Final one from Daily at Daily AFC. And that's Daley and not every day. just so people sure. are aware of that. He said, we've seen Martinez and Torreira firing up the coals for some barbecue action recently, and Aubameyang was at it this weekend too. So out of the Arsenal squad, who would you most like to visit for a barbecue, and who would you least trust to sort of cook over the coals?
Who would I most like to visit for a barbecue?
Yeah.
I mean, I have to say, I saw a couple of weeks back, Aubameyang had his sort of big barbecue party. You know, where everyone had the dyed red and white hair and the Arsenal shirts on?
Yeah.
And everyone sort of thought, oh, this must be the new contract. And then the announcement didn't happen. But that looked like fun. So I think that would be my choice. Although, Emi Martinez, I mean, the Argentines are good with meat, aren't they?
Yeah.
It's a speciality of theirs.
Yeah, they're the only country in the world to actually have meat. So
really?
Yeah.
They invented meat.
They invented meat. So, incredible. You know, they're just naturally gifted when it comes to cooking it.
Do you have a counter-argument for anybody in the Arsenal squad?
In terms of, like, who would be bad? Who would be a bad barbecue?
Well, yeah, all good.
I mean, I don't think I'd go to... let me see...
You probably wouldn't go to Hector Bellerin's barbecue because there'd be no meat on offer.
There wouldn't be any meat, no. It'd just be like grilled courgettes.
Yeah.
I have to say, though, you know, I've had a few barbecues this summer and cooking veg on the barbecue is good. I highly recommend,
nice,
like, you know, obviously people do corn, but I've been doing asparagus on the barbecue.
Oh, okay.
It's great. Just get a little, I got this little tray with holes in the bottom of it, and you can just put the asparagus in, bit of olive oil and salt, and it cooks away really nicely on the barbecue.
Okay.
I would say that I wouldn't want to go to, with the greatest of respect, Joe Willock's barbecue.
And why not?
I just, like, Joe doesn't strike me as a barbecue cook.
I think you'd end up having to do all the cooking.
That's it. That's it. Like, he could supply the stuff. I'd be quite happy to cook.
I don't think he can get it lit and get it going.
Yeah.
I'll be honest with you.
Maybe.
He doesn't have the experience.
Yeah. And I would say probably that would you say David Luiz, would he use like a gas barbecue? Do you think
maybe.
Just for convenience? Or would he, with his Brazilian heritage, consider that, you know, a crime against barbecuing? Who would be the gas barbecue guy out of the Arsenal squad? Guendouzi?
Yeah, why not? Let's label him with that. He's on the way out.
Yeah. We don't like him anymore anyway, so...
We've turned on him.
Yeah. Not only is he a bad guy behind the scenes, he uses a gas barbecue, for goodness sake.
That's what the Arsenal will be briefing to all the journalists. They'll be like, sources have indicated that Arsenal lost patience with Guendouzi when they discovered he was using a gas barbecue. That was said to be, you know, the straw that broke the camel's back.
Yeah, Mikel Arteta and Edu were shell shocked.
Arteta refused to speak about it in press conferences, but behind closed doors. Guendouzi was summoned to a meeting with Edu to apologise for using a gas barbecue.
Probably uses a hot plate. On the gas barbecue as well.
He refused to apologise. Yes, expected to move to a club more tolerant of his barbecuing tendencies.
Oh, PSG.
Probably.
Yeah. Absolutely. PSG are the gas barbecue of football. That's what they are. Right. Shall we leave it there?
Let's.
I think we should.
Let's.
We've
had a good old run.
We have indeed.
This is the last one.
Well,
last podcast.
Oh, yeah, before your kidnapping, of course. Be gentle. Whoever does it, just be gentle.
Well, if they want Arsenal to win, they won't be. That's the concern.
That is true. But they've got to keep you going. They've got to keep you alive for the course of the season. You'd be like that guy from Game of Thrones, just cutting bits off you week by week. Arsenal need a win, badly in need of a win. James loses another digit.
Terrifyingly, the people most inclined to do that might be the Arsenal fans, right? Because they want me to suffer. And who's going to find me if these, you know, spy Arsenal fans hide me? We're in big trouble.
Big, big trouble. Okay, well, look, take care out there, James.
I'll try.
You know, put some wing mirrors on your shoulders.
My face.
Yeah, just attach them to each shoulder and have them in front of you so you can see who, if anyone's coming up behind you.
That's a good idea.
Yeah, if you see, you know, if you're walking along and a guy needs help with his van, just don't help him.
All right, yeah. I'll be careful.
Do.
On the mean streets of Muswell Hill.
Yeah, we have got a Community Shield coming up this weekend, so we'll preview that on the Arsecast on Friday. We'll have another transfer pod on Patreon this week as well. So, as always, thank you indeed for being here. Thanks for listening, subscribing, and all that. And we'll catch you on the next one.
Bye-bye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.